Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I can't help but laugh out loud at this news story that just broke here in Oklahoma. Now, the short version of the story is that they've been doing a bunch of fracking, looking for oil, I guess, and it's this procedure that they use, which has apparently resulted in a huge quantity of earthquakes. Now, Oklahoma is known for tornadoes. We're not known for earthquakes. And yet we have become one of the most earthquake-prone regions of planet Earth in the last several years. And so we have these little quakes from time to time. And there was a news story about a quake we just had a couple of 3 days ago. It was on KWTV News 9. And they had posted the video. And the video said, a 4.7 magnitude earthquake that shook many Oklahomans awake early Thursday morning was caught on surveillance cameras at a store near the epicenter. And they post this video. And of course, anticipation is very high. And so you watch the video and it's 3 minutes long. And it's a surveillance camera, just an empty store. And you wait and you watch and you wait and you watch. And finally, I don't know, halfway through it, you see a couple of snack cakes on the corner end cap just sort of fall to the floor. And that's it. That's the entire thing. Well, obviously, this is a ripe opportunity for the comments section to go crazy. And the comments section became the reason to pursue this story on the KWTV News site. I posted one myself. I had a tombstone with flowers in front of it, and it says, random snack cakes lost before expiration. We will never forget. Well, other people have been chiming in as well. One guy said, $4.17 worth of damage. Our earthquakes have the strength of the average toddler. Josh said, I was too affected by this tragedy. Aaron said, we should all change our profile pictures in solidarity for this tragic earthquake event. Todd said, how can we expect to take in Syrian refugees after this devastating earthquake? We must take care of our own first and foremost. Apparently, it was a bag of sunflower seeds that fell. So a guy named Jeff just posted the hashtag sunflower strong. And many people are like, what? This isn't even a story. Well, they're warning us that we should expect something well over 5.6 or 5.7, whatever the big one was a couple of years, big for us a couple of years ago. They're saying all indications point to potentially intense earthquake at any time in the state of Oklahoma. So that's what everybody's been talking about. But this story just made me laugh out loud. I honestly can't believe they posted surveillance video of sunflower seeds falling from an end cap to the tile. Go figure. This is a random and impromptu broadcast consisting essentially of you, your calls, whatever's on your mind, whatever you want to talk about. That's what we talk about as we head toward the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm curious just to see if anybody's going to be talking about the challenge of dealing with religious family over the holiday. My family and I have this sort of uneasy peace. We all love each other. We're pleasant on the outside, but under the surface is this entire cauldron of subtext to everything we do, you know. So how was your day? Oh, wonderful. How's the house? Wonderful. How are the pets? Wonderful. And under the surface, it's, I'm sorry, you're such a shame to the family. Those types of experiences are common, I think, among apostates in highly religious families. I'll be curious to see if any of those pop up. But let's get it started. I'll start with area code 812. You are on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
This is Bridget Fitch from Holy Crap, the Vlogcast.
It's so great to have you. What's going on?
Well, a couple of things that have to do with the upcoming election. I'm hearing a lot of squabbling back and forth about, well, if my candidate doesn't get the nomination, I'm going to stay home. And people should consider that there's down ballot people they need to vote for. I don't care if they don't like who's running at the top. Yeah, they still need to go vote. And the other thing that's related to this, I am an Air Force veteran, and I am sick and tired of being popped out as a political prop, being taken for granted and used as a prop, around, you know, the holidays like Veterans Day, Memorial Day. It's a photo op and nothing more. And I feel like a one-trick pony because they're like, oh, we care about the troops, but let's kill bills so they can't have any extra money or jobs.
Does it rub you the wrong way if I say something like, thank you for your service? Does that feel patronizing to you?
No,
or do you appreciate it?
I appreciate it. I do like that. And I come from a long line of military people ever since World War One. So.
Well, thank you for your service.
Proud to do that.
I really appreciate the call as well. And I hope the holidays are good to you. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks. I've got Kitty on Skype. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast.
This is Kat, the shaman's wife.
Hey, what are you doing, Kat? I haven't spoken to you in almost 2 years, I think.
A year and a half, actually. My work schedule got so screwed around that I haven't been able to call in for a while.
Well, talk to me. What do you want to speak about on the radio today?
Well, first off, I wanted to say, hi, I miss everybody here. So does Wes, who's sleeping on the couch.
Well, for those who don't know who the shaman or the shaman's wife are, let's give them just a brief bit of context. Wes had called the show years and years ago and admitted on the radio that he was an actual shaman, correct?
Yes, he did.
And believed in the supernatural. In what context, what stuff did he believe in?
For him, it was mostly he believed in the Great Bear, which is different than what most people believe in. He's still more into nature than anything else, but he's slowly coming away from that.
Wait, so the Great Bear?
Yeah, the Great Bear. It's his version of God, pretty much. Think of the Big Dipper, Little Dipper, Mother Bear, Baby Bear. Mother Bear is the one who nourishes and takes care of everything, and Baby Bear is a sense of renewal.
And he latched onto an atheist broadcast. Why? I mean, what was the attraction?
He likes to think. He loves the thought-provoking that it pulls with him. Yeah. And because of that thought-provoking, the fact that he doesn't agree with most of the mainstream religions also brought him to latch onto the podcast. Over time, he's actually moved away from it farther and farther, though he's gotten a little bit back into it since I've gotten pregnant. Yay.
Well, you know, the kid's going to be raised around some interesting perspectives, no doubt.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail the train, but
you
guys have been part of the radio family for a long time. What's on your mind today, Kat?
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I've gone back on the phones recently, and I ran into another atheist down in Mississippi. The conversation I had with that man was absolutely amazing. We were sitting there probably for a good hour, hour and a half, trying to fix his phone, just talking about how the first words out of people's mouths when you're down south is, what church do you go to?
Well, it's not easy for anybody in the south. How's he holding up?
From what I remember, he was holding up really well. He actually likes to start fights with the religious nut jobs down there. One of the things he will do is he will start quoting the Bible at them and make their heads explode.
Well, there's plenty of ammunition within Scripture. Is he going on the attack? I mean, is he just trying to piss people off, or is he genuinely engaging in discussion in an attempt to...
He's genuinely engaging in discussion to defend why he doesn't go to church. Because they look at him like he's crazy for not going to church.
You know, I'm one of those people. I'm all about constructive discourse or even countering bad ideas. But, you know, those people who walk in just to piss other people off, they go in just to stir the shitstorm because they can. They enjoy that kind of thing. You may enjoy it. I don't know how helpful it is. And I always try to find out if we've drawn that distinction. Is he having dialogue, or is he just going in and saying, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, that kind of deal?
Yeah, no, he grew up as a Southern Baptist. So what it was when we were talking, he was telling me people would just start asking him these random Jesus questions. And instead of answering them, he would give them, you know, well, the same old thing that the rest of them give him, I don't believe. And they'd go like, oh, my God, you're a heathen. And then he'd start quoting Bible scriptures as reasons why he doesn't believe.
Well, it's healthy, I think, for people in those cocoons to see a differing point of view and to know there's a non-believer or at least a skeptic around them. You know, if you feel like everybody agrees with you, it becomes a reinforcement culture. It's healthy for them to see some heathenry in their midst and to see lightning didn't strike them and they're leading good, healthy, hopefully healthy, happy, productive lives. And they love people and they are the anti-caricature of what they've been told the non-believer is. I think that's healthy for folks. And I'm sure it's especially so in the South. So good stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It has to be. Well, anyway, I'm not going to keep you. I know you've got other people wanting to talk, but I just wanted to call in and say, hey, I miss everybody. By the way, you've lost the game.
I've lost the game. There's another in joke that new listeners have no idea what you're talking about. Say hi to your husband and tell him to scratch the great big bear behind. Is it great bear or big bear?
Great bear.
Just scratch the great bear for me behind the ears and we'll catch up with you guys later. Okay.
All right. We will.
See you
Bye.
Later. He believes in the great bear. I just sort of got stuck on that notion. Like you've constructed some other with a capital O, and that other has a form, an animal form, the form of a great bear. That's a whole other show. Area code 540, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hey, this is Josh from Los Angeles.
Josh, thanks for calling the broadcast. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I just had to do a little gushing. My dad actually turned me on to your show. I'm from Virginia, and he was an ex-pastor at a Presbyterian kind of church. They were actually non-denominational, but our beliefs followed that of a Presbyterian. And, yeah, so he left the church, working for the church, and then started to question his thoughts, his beliefs more objectively. And, got me turned on to your show, and I love it. We have a great time now. I think we've been really bonding over talking about our beliefs and our changes. I came out of the closet like before I moved to LA, and I think that might have brought me. So I went a lot of times. I think people, after leaving the religion, I was just more apathetic than anything. I didn't care about, you know, what was going on. And then my dad, when he turned on the show, my parents are just split. So my mom is still very religious. And one time I went back home and she brought up this statement. She said, you know what, it's so it seems so obvious that in nature, there's all this proof that things get worse as time goes on. And kind of hinting at the evidence against evolution, you know?
Oh, she's talking about the entropy argument, chaos. Yeah.
Yeah, and, this is before I'd even heard about it.
Quite often that's framed inside the second law of thermodynamics, which is an argument I hear from time to time. You know, a system cannot become more ordered. Evolution doesn't make sense because complexity couldn't have arisen out of all this. It just would become more random and crazy. And I was talking to Jerry Coyne about it on the radio a couple of years ago. We were talking about the fact that this is true only in a closed system, and the Earth is not a closed system. We receive the energy of the sun, other variables in play. It's a huge oversimplification and misrepresentation of what the second law is. But a lot of people just see something complex and they see design. That's what I normally run into. Look at the beautiful rainbows, that kind of thing, you know. I posted something on the Facebook page yesterday, and it said rainbow. I had a photograph, rainbows, proof of God's goodness. And then it had the second photograph was a house that had fallen into a sinkhole, and it just there was no caption. You know, it's just proof of I don't know what that's proof of. I don't really understand it. But I appreciate the kind words, man. Thanks for listening to the show, and thank your father for me. Okay.
Thank you so much, Steph. I'll definitely he'll hear it tomorrow.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye.
I mean, I post those things online from time to time because we are surrounded by, you know, when you look at the face of a newborn child and you see this complex, beautiful human life, how can you not look at that and know? And it's an emotional response. How can you look at this beautiful sunset on the ocean? How can you look at all of these things that, the snowflake kind of thing. And you know, yeah, they're amazing and they're complex and they're beautiful, but we don't give agency to their creation. Who was it? Was it Stephen Fry who said it's not enough? I'm paraphrasing to say that there are beautiful things in the world and that proves God. You also must account for things like bone cancer in children. As Daniel Dennett, who talked about that insect that would bore its way into the skull of another insect so it could lay its eggs and the larva would eat itself out of the live host. Yeah, you have to account for those types of things in nature and ask yourself, is this really a grand design? I actually produced a video called Intelligent Design that tackled things like this. Back to the switchboard, area code 707. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. It's Dennis in California. How the heck are you?
I'm great, man. Thanks for calling me from the West Coast. What's going on in your life?
Long-time listener. Actually started listening to you about 5 years ago. I post once in a while.
That was back near the beginnings. I think we started in summer of 2010, so you're a veteran listener, yeah, man.
That's about the time I woke up.
Me too.
Question for you, my friend. How do you get through the upcoming holiday with that 800-pound gorilla in the room as you look around at your family? I'm going to go through the same thing here in a couple of days, and I love them to pieces. But
yeah.
Wow. How do you do it?
Well, you know, I try to maintain perspective in the grand scheme of things. You know, when you look at, like, apostasy in fundamental Islamic nations and you see what they go through, my problems pale in comparison. You know, I think my life's not being threatened. They're not going to saw my head off. You know, they're not going to hang my family members in the street. You know, those types of things. When someone leaves religion in certain parts of the world, it does put it in perspective. I try to keep it in perspective, but it's hard because my family all believe in God and they all believe in an absolutely true, perfect Bible. And they all, in my opinion, live in a shoebox, this tiny little frame of an existence that blocks all contrary ideas. And so when we try to have conversations, or we've tried in the past to speak about science, they'll just reject any legitimate scientist to bring to the discussion because they've already embraced the Bible first.
Right.
The part that probably makes me the most crazy is not the fact that we disagree, because people disagree all the time. You and I might disagree on some stuff. What drives me crazy about these encounters is under the surface, there seems to be this sort of pity and condescension. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you feel that?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I get that glazed over look, and I don't want to be the one to bring everybody down because I love the holidays, brother. It's just great. I love sharing and,
yeah,
you know, spending time with the kids. It's fun. But I mean, I just wonder how someone like Dan Barker, who has in his camp, since he's deconverted, several of his family members have gone, they're now non-believers.
But yeah, parents.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, they did the deconversion, but he was instrumental, right? There's an example of somebody who was reasoned out of an unreasonable faith. He was able to have those conversations. Well, my folks, I mean, I'm not going to get too personal here, but my folks are, you know, Dad's just turned 81. I don't have any illusions that in the winter of his life, he's going to reject the belief system that he has essentially married himself to so deeply for so long. I've never been pounding on their doors to try to get them to agree with me. They don't give me the same courtesy. They want to have conversations to convince me. Me, I just want us to be able to mutually disagree and still exist in the same space without that undertone of condescension and pity and all those things. So I drew a pretty hard line in the sand. I didn't do Christmas with my family at all last year. I just said, screw it. You know, why do this to yourself? And I came to this point in my life where I thought, well, if the time comes and my parents pass away, will I kick myself for not doing more? I mean, is it enough to be right? Should I just instead take the high road? I don't even know the answer to these questions, but this is the conversation that I'm having in my mind. But the short version is this. Finally, I get to the short answer, is that I see my parents as victims. I think they're victims of bad ideas. I think they're good-hearted people. who love their family. They're just victims of bad ideas. And so when I go over there now, they'll inevitably throw out something about the end times. My father's big into the state of Israel and the book of Revelation and Jesus is coming and there was a hurricane and it's a sign and he's that kind of dude. And instead of launching into a rabid debate, frothing at the mouth and huffing my way out of the room, now I just simply frame it in my own mind as, you know, he's a victim of bad ideas. And yeah. I'll never change him. Just smile, you know, smile, move on. And if he makes you too crazy, just politely excuse yourself, you know, check your watch and say, hey, look at the time. Got to go. <You know? laughs> but I'll never change him. I mean, do you think you'd ever change your folks?
No, my father's long gone. My mom was raised Catholic, but that was just what she was raised into. And she doesn't take it seriously. My in-laws are the ones that they're Baptists. And that's what I was raised in since I was 5 years old. And so that's been kind of tough. But, you know, when you look across that table, when everybody bows their head, and everybody in the chat room knows what I'm talking about, you know, and they go, let's pray, and they're kind of looking at you to make sure your eyes are closed and your head is bowed, and that's not the case. But you do it out of courtesy. Like you say, you draw that line. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But, you know, you get through it. You don't want to bring them down.
I'm glad you brought up the prayer. If I'm in their house and they want to bless the meal, they want to gather everybody around and they want to hold hands or do whatever they do and they bow their head. The prayers in my family's home are universally just vacuous. Thank you, Lord, for this food and for all our many blessings. We ask for, you know, your guidance and comfort. Amen. I mean, it's just this bumper sticker that it's an obligatory thing they do and it makes them feel happy and good. And I don't close my eyes. I'm certainly not praying, but I don't make a big thing out of it. I just go, I hang out of respect. I just do my deal, right? If they try that in my home, now we've got a problem, right? You're not going to come into my house and dictate a prayer. I get to set the rules here. But if I'm in your place and you want to pray, doesn't bother me a bit. Knock yourself out, you know?
So your house is like Sick'em Rat Dog. Is that the idea?
I would, my little 4-pound canines would rain down ankle high death upon you if you attempt to impose yourself religiously inside these walls, you know? And it's not because I want to take away your ability or your right to pray. Pray under your breath. Pray personally. Pray privately. Knock yourself out. But you don't get to walk in here and say, well, now that I'm here, you know, we are going to pay homage to the great architect of this meal. And I'm like, well, if you want to pay homage to the architect of the meal, we're right here. You know, you can just thank us personally. That's all you really need to do. And it's all about boundaries. And I'm going to go into my holiday. I'm going to try to keep a positive outlook. And unless I am proselytized to directly or condescended to directly, I'm not going to be a pain in the ass. I'm not going to make a discussion out of it. I'm not going to feed the beast. I'm going to go. I'm going to try to make the most of it. And again, I see them in this way as victims of bad ideas. And if I can keep that mindset, it seems to help me. Doesn't mean the boundaries can't be observed, but yeah, they're victims of bad ideas. Maybe that'll help you moving forward. I hope the holidays are good for you, though.
Oh, they're great. And holidays are fantastic. Got to be honest, you're helping a lot of people get through the holidays. I remember a few years ago, you posted a Father's Day card that you got from your father, or a note or something. It was like a 2x4 upside my head about him coming, having you come back to the flock. It was very condescending. I just felt the pain in what you were going through. I thought, man, each holiday must be a real bad, real pain in the ass for you. But you get through.
Well, I feel bad for griping about it on the radio. I don't have anybody that I can talk to in my city. You know, I mean, obviously I speak to Natalie about it, but I don't have a lot of pals that I hang around with, and all my family members and a great many of my friends are all believers. So I come to the radio audience, I come to my radio family, and I'm like, I just got to vet yeah. people, you know? So you guys bear the brunt of that. You're all like my bartender. I feel guilt after it's over. I'm like, I'm sorry I burdened you with all of my problems. But
this is the exact opposite. It's like a revival in reverse for us. That's what we get. I don't know the rest of the audience, but that's what I get. I said, how in the hell am I going to get through this holiday knowing there's solidarity? Yeah, we're up in a liberal place here in Northern California, but you'd be amazed. I like Christopher Hitchens used to say how far the termites have gotten. Try to bring you down like you're the second-class citizen. You don't get it. You know, we don't want you to go to hell. All that garbage that you, all that baggage that you get, And having the radio audience and the Facebook, it's been great. So I won't keep you, but thanks for hanging there. I'll send you some funny stuff.
Thanks for the kind words, my friend, and I hope the holidays are wonderful, all right?
You as well, sir. Thank you.
Take it easy. Thank you. Let me camp out on the holidays for just a second. I said this at a tour stop, a couple of tour stops in this last few months, and I'll say it to you, but I've become this, I'm like two people. It's like you've sliced my mind into two sections, and there's one section that's like boundaries. You don't get to tell me I'm broken and hellbound and I'm an embarrassment to the family, and I've heard these things in my own life. You don't get to tell me that my life has to be lived a specific way simply because I am your child and this is how you raised me and this is what I'm going to do. I was a child. I wasn't a clone. Is the reason you brought me into the world so that I could just be you? No, I'm me. I'm going to go figure this out on my own terms without apology. Part of me is like, if you can't respect that boundary, then screw you, I'm out. And then I draw that hard line and check out and go spend time with people that will support me and respect me for who I am and that can respectfully disagree. Family, in many cases, is the family you choose. That's part of me. And the other part of me says, you know, they're just victims of bad ideas in a culture of religious reinforcement. And, you know, they're spinning on the hamster wheel and they'll probably never change their minds. It doesn't mean you can't or at least shouldn't do something to participate in their lives. You shouldn't check out. It's healthy for them to see you happy, to see you living on your own terms. And honestly, you might regret one day if they are gone and you didn't do all you could. And these two parts of my mind are always at war with each other. And I still don't know what the right answer is. I've gone both directions over the course of the last half decade. At some point, I'm like, you know, it's great. We'll go and I'll do what I can. And there have been points in my life where I'm like, I'm sorry, you don't get to talk to me that way, family or not. And then I'll bounce back to the other direction. I'm just all over the place. And even now, I'm sure the comments section is probably going to have a ton of opinions on the subject. Many people have cut their families off entirely. Other people say, I could never imagine doing such a thing. Maybe everybody's right. I don't know. But the larger point I was going to make at the beginning of this rant was that the holidays really should be what you make them. I see so many people pinballing from door to door, house to house, because they feel obligated. You know, we have to go here. We have to go there. We have to spend 30 minutes at this person's house. We have to go over there or else they're going to raise hell. And I just think, man, that's just no way to spend the holiday. This is supposed to be a positive thing. It's really supposed to be about you and your loved ones, and you should be able to celebrate it on your own terms. You know, it's not something where I'm obligated and therefore I'm going to have the joy sucked out of the occasion. No, you get to define it on your own terms. Spend it in your own way. Celebrate it in your own method. And you have the right to do that. And if the traditions of your family aren't what you want to do, then start your own traditions. Knock yourself out. You get to define the holiday. And that's just the one encouragement I always try to give people. Now, people living their whole lives under obligation, even family imposed, certainly religiously imposed obligation, I just think that's tragedy. Life is way too short. Area code 501. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Leon.
Leon, what's going on?
I'm honestly so sick of the old cliche that if you're a non-believer or a pagan, you have to be liberal or you have to join to sign the liberal beliefs. There are some, or if you're a non-believer, you sign to go Republican, you're looked down upon. I know in my own family, I'm a very, very Republican, very right-wing. And during the holidays, like you said, it's very difficult. So, any advice?
Well, I'm not sure the angle. Are you saying that you yourself are more of a conservative leaning?
No. I'm liberal, but I'm walking on eggshells around my family.
Well, you know, atheists can come in all colors and shades and shapes and stripes. They can be Democrat. Mm-hmm. They can be Republican. They can be whatever, you know. It just atheism means they do not believe in the supernatural. They don't believe in gods. And that's about it. Quite often our non-belief, I think, informs our perspectives politically. I look at myself when I was still a Fox News watching God believer. And I look at myself now and I see many examples. I'm thinking of doing a show about how the rest of your life changes when you relinquish supernatural things. When I relinquished, when I gave up and I walked away from these religiously imposed edicts about gays, and I didn't have that kind of dominionist view of the earth and thinking Jesus is going to come at any second, so what the hell? And a lot of those other types of issues were related to my religious belief. I think they are tied. And I think, I don't have any statistics, but I would assume or guess that a lot of people lean more Democrat or progressive. I don't think just because somebody has a D after their name, they get a pass or they're automatically right or smart or any of those things. In my own life, I've tended to find myself leaning that direction more because that's where my values are. You know, I support things like the legalization of marijuana. Well, that's not going to be on the Republican ticket. I support the abolition of the death penalty. That's not going to be on the Republican ticket. You know, those types of things. Gay marriage. That's not going to be on the Republican ticket. However, I do know a great many people who are Republicans, who are very conservative. They are quite often Bible believers, and they're not stupid people. They don't hate other people. They aren't caricatures of what often many Republicans are painted as, especially on social media. And so when I see these memes out that if you voted Republican, you're like the Nazis, those types of things, I think they're completely unhelpful because they address a hugely complex situation with these provocative bumper stickers. You know, these are people quite often victims of bad ideas. But it doesn't mean they're necessarily bad people. Does that track with you at all?
Yes, it does. And if you have time for one more small question.
Okay, quickly.
Okay, I'm pagan, but I'm more Wiccan, but I want to do the Wiccan edicts without worshiping the god or the god or goddess, as we Wiccans call it. Protect nature, be with nature without worshiping a god or a goddess or any divine, to be frank.
We're going to cover Wicca. I was going to do it this year in the month of October. I just didn't. I just thought it'd be a nice tie-in. But we're going to do a show probably on Wicca in the next year at some point, and we'll get into what it is, what it isn't, the many shades of Wicca. And we'll try to approach the subject responsibly and respectfully and try to educate everybody. I mean, just as we have with other cultures, traditions, beliefs, religions, whatever, we'll try to approach Wicca in the same responsible way. Fair enough?
Fair. Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't know anything about it. I just don't know anything about it. And I was the same way about Jehovah's Witnesses and some others before we did those shows. And so I brought in some people who reflected what that was about. They'd been inside those walls. They had participated and practiced, and we got into the backgrounds and what it is, how it became. You know, same with things like the Universalist. I don't know anything about the Universalist until we preparing for that show, and it became an opportunity for education for all of us. We'll probably do that with Wicca here in the next year or so. Area code 412, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. It's Diana.
What's going on?
Oh, I'm just getting things ready for the holidays as far as that goes. I put a turkey in the defrigonator to brine and be roasting it on Thursday. I'll be having it alone, but that's okay.
It hurts my heart. You're going to spend the holidays by yourself?
Yes, it's not that bad. I remember we talked about this, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. I was in some pretty bad conditions, bad housing, that sort of thing. It's a lot better now. I'm coming to terms with it. It's, as you say about doing your own traditions, I'm more or less setting mine up. And mine are my own. Nobody in my so-called family shares any of this thing. Well, my family is about 100 miles away anyway. So I'm just doing this for me. For example, in December, I fully intend to set up a Christmas tree and light a menorah. I like the symbolism, especially of the menorah, the return of the light. Let's never mind the Maccabees thing that's, you know, a little bit of a fairy tale, but coming across the solstice and the days begin to get longer again. I know it's a little early this year, but And it's the first time in about 3 years that I've been able to do anything. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, too, as far as that goes.
Good for you.
Leon, I think, was just talking to you just before me and mentioned Wicca.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, I have a very, 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 very dear friend who was involved in Wicca for a long time. She even did a talk at one of the Mensa conventions years ago. I'm wondering if there's a possibility that I can put her in touch with you. Would you be interested in talking to someone who is in the field?
Hell yeah. We'll see if we can put something together for the next year. That sounds great.
Okay. And you and yours, please have a happy Thanksgiving.
You got it. You do the same.
The whole winter holiday thing.
I appreciate the kind words. Have a great one, then. We'll talk to you next time, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. See you later. Area code 619. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hey, Seth. This is Jason.
Jason, man, are you hand gliding or something? It sounds like you're outside somewhere.
Actually, I am outside. I'm talking in the parking lot.
All right. Well, I heard the wind blowing, and I figured you were in motion in Chicago. I don't know what. What's on your mind?
San Diego. Well, I'm a recovering Catholic, and I consider myself to be a free thinker atheist. You guys have helped me a lot. Your podcast, I've been listening to it off and on for the last 2 years or so, you know?
Thank you.
And, and also, I need a shout-out to Matt Dillahunty, too. And that show pissed me off at first, but then I really enjoy it now, the Atheist Experience. And also, The Dark Matter, the one you showed me, the videos, that's awesome. And Guy P. Harrison's books and P.T. Meyer's books as well.
Cool. I'm glad they helped
you. I guess what I'm working on now, I consider myself, like I said, a recovering Catholic. I was raised Baptist, not hardcore Baptist, more just like generic, a Southern California Baptist. But then I wound up going to a Christian college for 2 years, and I went to Mexico as a missionary. I lived down there for about 8 years. I got into mostly non-denominational. Long story short, I came back about 10 years ago when my dad passed away. I was mostly raised by my mom. My dad was Catholic, but he never went to church or nothing. So I came back about 10 years ago and tried some non-denominational mega churches out here in San Diego, but I just kind of outgrew them. I broke that spell. So I said, well, I'm going to try the Catholic church. Out of good intentions, you know, Seth, out of good intentions, looking for the truth. So I tried the Catholic church for a while. And then just recently, I woke up and said, you know what? This is all about money and control, and they want so much money. Some of these Catholic parishes, churches want like $10,000 a week. I say, for what? For what the heck do they want that much money for? And because I even thought about becoming a priest or a monk, I was that indoctrinated the last few years. But then I woke up and said, you know what? And I'll come out here on the radio. I thought, I have sexual issues, but then I thought, no, you know what? I am gay because I've never had a girlfriend. I'm coming out of the closet on radio. I can't believe this, but yeah. And
if you're comfortable talking about it, I always say, do it on your terms, you know?
I am. This is, This is liberating for me. And so I was a pursuer of truth, and I was in the Catholic Church, and I like the smells and bells, but like you said before, it's damn boring. But I guess part of me enjoyed it. But then I thought, you know what? It's unhealthy. It's so unhealthy, the celibacy crap. And then I dug more into history and into the sex abuse scan. I said, you know what? I can't put up with this anymore. But I guess, Steph, my conundrum is there's a lot of Catholics that might even be secular. They're secular humanists in their thinking, but they still hold on to it for cultural reasons. You know, they're cultural Catholics, especially a lot of Hispanics and Latinos. But I still think they're being taken advantage of by all the money and just maybe even just brainwashing. But how do you see that, Seth, cultural Catholicism in your point of view as an atheist?
I see it in Christianity as well. These people, they'll go, they clock in Sunday morning, they do an hour-long church service, maybe brunch afterwards, and then for the rest of the week, they live completely secular lives. If they were in a car wreck tonight, their first action wouldn't be to drop to their knees and call down the healing power of the most powerful creature in the universe. They would immediately call 911, and they would put their trust in trained medical personnel. They worry constantly, which is weird for people who believe they are cradled in the all-powerful, all-loving hand of the Almighty, creator of the universe. Right. You know, those types of things. They live secular lives. They just invoke God. They find comfort in God. And I find that's very much the case inside Catholicism. You know, these people, they don't know anything about the Bible. A great many people who attended Catholic Church, right? I mean, it's not like they're encouraging you guys to read Scripture, right? Instead, they spoon-feed you.
Yeah.
And so what I think, though, I was talking to Mandisa Thomas with Black Nonbelievers, and she was talking about how the church had provided a hub at one point for them during the civil rights battles of the 1960s and 70s. The church was sort of a hub for them. The church gave comfort to people who were fighting extreme poverty and were being discriminated against, and it gave comfort. So what happened was the church became kind of this coping mechanism.
Right.
And I think as long as there is poverty, as long as there is suffering, as long as there are people who are under the boot of someone else, they will always be turning to the happy ending that they've manufactured in their minds or that have been spoon-fed by somebody else, because that's how they cope. One day justice will be done. One day we'll have a mansion in heaven. One day we'll have eternal bliss and peace. One day we'll be reunited with those who were ripped from us on this earthly plane. We'll one day have a happy ending in the sky.
Right.
And I think it's, as long as there is suffering, there will be people who turn to religion to try to cope with it. So in my mind, I think we have to try to go and do battle against a lot of the suffering that's happening in the world. And that's the humanist in me. That's the humanist who wants to not just be a non-believer in deities. I want to be a believer in helping people.
Humanity, but what I was going to say too, Seth, a lot of Catholics now, they don't even believe in hell or the devil. I mean, I never really bought into the idea of hell or eternal torment. And some Catholic, older Catholics do believe it, but a lot of priests and people don't even believe in hell, suffering, that everybody's going to heaven. So recently I had an epiphany with that, Seth. I thought, okay, everybody's going to heaven. I mean, it's supposedly Hitler, everybody's going to go through purgatory to heaven. And that just didn't make any sense to me. So I said, either we all go to heaven or there's just nothing. It's just all BS and there's nothing when we die. You know, there's no
let me get back to the money. Hang on. Let me get back to the money. How does the Catholic Church do money? Do you tithe? Do they pass a plate?
They just pass a plate, a basket, and then they give online too for people who want to give online. But they make a crap load of money.
So are they pitching blessings from on high then, or is this your spiritual duty?
It's just your duty, your obligation.
And so people who may not have the money to give are then sold the idea that God wants them to give money they may not have, and they are then doing their Catholic duty.
Most of the older people, younger people, aren't buying this shit. You should see my language, but they're not buying it. But the some younger, I think the ones that are turning 20s and 30s, I'm 38 myself, but 20 to 40, they're not buying it unless they're really brainwashed, but they're taking the money from all the older people, the 60, 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old crowd.
There's I think it's a religious university. It's a religious organization in this town. And they've got the setup where when you are older, they take care of you in the winter years of your life. And in exchange for them taking care of you, when you die, all your stuff goes to them. So all your assets, all the equity in your house, all of your bank account, everything becomes theirs. So, they're like, oh, hey, we'll take care of you. We love you. And then as soon as you're gone, all the stuff that you would spend a lifetime investing in or accumulating or saving or owning or whatever then goes to this religious institution. I think, is that real compassion? Right.
My dilemma is too, Seth, is like, I can't come out where basically my family, I don't talk to them much anyway. My parents, my mom was Baptist, my dad passed away. But anyway, the only person that I live with is I'm a caretaker. She's extremely Catholic, and I have to. She's like one of those crazy types. I met her in church because I didn't have anywhere else to live at the time. I was almost homeless, basically. But basically, I've moved in with her, and it's been good, but I have my deconversion. I can't really come out to her because I'm afraid she's bipolar, too, so I'm afraid I'll just get kicked out or something. So, and plus that I'm gay, too, and she's very homophobic, too. She watches too much Fox News and TV and all that stuff, but she's Catholic. So right now, my situation is I want to learn to love and accept myself, be true to myself, but I still pray with her because she wants me to, the rosary, the beads, you know, and I still go to church with her even though I don't agree with it. So I'm not really sure what to do. Like you said, it's a game of chess right now, but I'm not really sure what to do.
Well, I mean, I'm not Yoda. I just think, honestly, if you're not sure about coming out, don't. I mean, because once that gorilla's out of the cage, you never get it back in. So do it on your timing, do it on your terms. But if you're at a point where you're like, I just don't know the consequences, if you're not sure, just hang on. It can be done tomorrow. It can be done a week from tomorrow. Just make sure you do it on your terms and do it in a time and place when you have the footing to be able to handle it if things do go south with those that you have come out to, okay? But your life belongs to you. I hope you live it on your terms, and I hope it's happy and wonderful for you, okay?
Thanks. You too. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a good
All right. See you later. All right. I've got a Skype call. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
My name is Robert Kruger.
Hey, what's going on, Robert?
I attended your Three Horsemen of the Apocalypse, I believe it was, in Albuquerque.
No, the Unholy Trinity. Yeah, yeah.
The Unholy Trinity.
You know, a lot of people have told us the Three Horsemen. I have no idea what to do with that reference. Did you have a good time at the event?
Yes, I did. And I was the person who asked the last question, if you recall, at the end of the get-together, and we also talked afterwards.
That was a year and a half ago. I need some context. But
Well, I'm the anarchist guy.
Okay.
So the question that comes to my mind is, if we are to look at what it is that is constitutes woo or a faith-based decision or superstition, how do we, you know, define the criteria that go into that evaluation? Where do we say, all right, well, if it's got these components, it qualifies as woo or faith-based belief system?
Well, from my perspective, I actually reverse it. I start with a burden of proof.
Okay.
So if, you know, if Dr. Oz goes on television and he makes a claim about a product or a method of healing, my first question is, well, has this been vetted? Have we run it through the scientific method? Have we experimented? What do, as Dr. Harriet Hall at Science-Based Medicine would say, what do its most active critics have to say about it? You know, has it run the gauntlet and come out the other side? And when I say something is woo, it's when someone has not met the burden of proof, and yet they are exclaiming that something is truth with a capital T. Here's a piece of medicine involving crystals, and it works, but I can't prove it. Here's how and why the universe was designed, and why I'm the most important thing in it, but I can't prove it. Those types of things.
All right. So I guess then the assertion that
we're going into a stream on anarchy. I can see this one coming. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing that I like to assert is that if the claimant is making an exception for a particular rule that they consider to be normalized, universal rule, but except for this particular thing. Like, for example, we can say that, well, morality is universal except for God, because God can violate it and he can cause the mass murder of all the people that were on the planet through this gigantic flood, including unborn children and pregnant women, because God has his own plan and he's an exception to the rule. Then that would be woo or a faith-based or unreasonable perspective. And that if, let's say, we can measure all things using the scientific method, we can use these different methodologies, but my particular understanding of the crystals and their effects upon the ability to channel one's energies violate that rule because of something, and they make an exception for it that breaks the our understanding of the rules that we establish, then that would be woo. And so the exceptions in thinking for those things to me is a sign, but it's different than, I guess, what your claim is. So,
well, I want to start with things like universal morality, those types of, I mean, universal truth, universal. I don't subscribe to, like, you know, the objective moral standard. I don't subscribe to anything universal. I mean, it's all up for grabs. It's all up to be tested and retested every single day.
So I know that, you know, on your normal blog, on your normal podcast, that a large number of the listeners that you're going to be having are going to either be exploring the concept of atheism and not necessarily going into a lot of the more advanced things that that the thought process goes into. They're dealing with the social ramifications and the dealing with emotional ostracism and social ostracism that they get from family and so on. And so when it comes to going into thinking as far as a logical rigor, you find that at least I find that a lot of times that is not exactly the topic that comes across. But, you know, you do from time to time have people who come on and do discuss things with, you know, the logical rigor and so on. And I really do appreciate those. And so in any case, I know that you're going to have other callers that you're going to want to have conversations with. And at some point in time, I would like to hopefully have a conversation with you where we can go through some of the logic behind, you know, the rationale behind why it is that I believe that the claim that without a government we would have chaos and violence and abuse is it's mysticism. It's a claim of it's very much like a superstition that has been taught to us by the system that exists with government, schooling, and so on.
Now, let me just stop you right there. If it is a bad idea or a failed idea, it still doesn't equate it to superstition.
True.
And so what's happening is I think you're conflating different terms to express a disagreement with an idea, an ideology, something that may or may not be a good idea. But if it's a bad idea, it's not necessarily a superstitious one. And, well, you know, it's something we may explore down the way. But the idea that anarchy is a viable model, do I buy that? I really don't.
Not
do
yet.
I have it?
I imagine you don't yet, you know, but you've got libertarian leanings. So I think that you might be open to the concept.
I've got a few. But yeah. I'm not an enemy of social constructs. I'm not even an enemy of governmental constructs in order to frame the society in which we live.
Right. Well, the thing that I would say is actually the superstition is the belief that we have a thing called authority, that when we establish our society, we create this group of people called the authority that have somewhat supernatural powers to exist outside of what the normal expectation for regular human beings are.
That I don't see supernatural in that context at all. They might have unreasonable powers. They might have unreasonably appropriated powers. They might have unchecked powers. But the word supernatural doesn't belong in that assertion. It's inappropriate linking of the terms.
It might be a misnomer, but the same concept is what I'm talking about, is that it is a construct of a belief that they have a righteousness behind them, that they are correct in their having this extra normal power set, that when we look at any other group of people, if we said to them, let's say, for example, we've got a group of people, they happen to be fairly large in number, and they claim the right to be able to extort money from you and say to you, if you don't give us your money, we're going to put you into a cage. Every normal group of people is expected that the answer to that question is no, that's stupid. Why would we accept that? But you attach the term government to it, and then it becomes normalized and accepted. And part of this comes from the indoctrination that occurs throughout schooling.
Unless it is a government that is instituted by the very same people who are paying the taxes or the fees or obeying the regulations, the same people who are participants. I realize this is all rather nebulous, because how much influence we genuinely have over the government is, that's certainly debatable, right? Is the machine out of control? Is the 800-pound gorilla completely out of control? But we're not talking about two completely separate systems. We're talking about a participatory system where people actually supposedly have a hand in electing and keeping accountable the people who are enforcing the laws, who are making the laws, the people who are governing.
Right.
And so it's a symbiotic process. It's not completely allegiant. You know, people just don't wake up one day and find the big G sitting over them saying, you must do this.
It isn't exactly symbiotic, because there are a very large population of people in the United States who are anarchists like myself, that believe that we would like to live and pay for those services that we want in our own way, and not have a government sell us that we, you know, they're the only people we can buy these services from. They're the only people that we can go to have our contracts resolved and in finality, that instead we can certainly make some alternates with arbitration and so on. But at the end result, if push comes to shove, we still finally have to go to the government in order to get their opinion on it.
One thing you and I know, do agree on, is that the system is monumentally broken, and that there is a tremendous amount of waste and a tremendous lack of accountability, and I don't know what the solution is. Look, I can tell by the kind of the chat room that we've probably dwelled in this little pool a little too long. We may approach anarchy in the new year. I don't know. Let me decide. Let me kind of take a straw poll and see if enough people really give a shit.
Well, actually, I invited you in our conversation about a year ago to
you and me and Matt Dillahunty and Aaron Raw. I mean, you made the rounds out there. You've obviously got a fire in your belly, and I appreciate that. But
and
is that what this
show is?
You said that
you consider coming on my show, and I was hoping that that you would just you know, further entertain that. I sent you a message on Facebook, and hopefully you'll consider that and reach out, and we can have that conversation. I think that I can be pretty persuasive. I do from time to time use terminology that may be inaccurate, but you know, the general concept is correct. So in any case, I just wanted to thank you for being a great voice and advocate out there for critical thinking.
I appreciate the kind word. I really do. And thanks for listening, and thanks for being a part of the broadcast. Okay.
It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Take care. I want to interject real fast before I get to my next call. He referenced that I lean libertarian, and this is incorrect. I have a few libertarian leanings, you know, specifically regarding like the legalization of most drugs. The idea of imprisoning people for pot makes me crazy. This is an individual choice, and I think the government needs to stay out of it. I am a fan of a leaner, meaner governmental system, but I don't hold to the libertarian platform as a whole. People like to latch onto the word, and they get stuck there. Like many people, my political positions don't fit into a cookie cutter. They don't easily fit on a bumper sticker. They're always in play, and I would hope this is the case for all of us. I've changed my mind on a great many things over the years, and I want to continue to evaluate and be prepared to change my positions again when warranted. When I was a believer, I was blindly allegiant to the R, Republican good, Democrat bad. And I won't be blindly allegiant to any single letter or single party. I like to sort of approach it issue by issue and then determine at this measure which party sucks the least. Regarding anarchy, I don't have a problem with an accountable governmental system in place. The concept of a governmental system, I don't have a problem, nor do I see the acknowledgement of governmental authority as some sort of religiously framed acceptance of power with a capital P. I've got my qualms with many shades of government. Most of my complaints have to do with corruption, ineptitude inside government walls, waste, rampant waste. But, you know, I'm not prepared in my own mind to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I personally prefer to live in a system of government with structure and with rule of law, those types of things. And I don't treat any elected official as some kind of divinely appointed or deified ruler standing on the mountain above me. And it's a class system, and they're a greater class than I. I support a system where the government pays for the shit it undertakes, where public servants actually serve instead of living it up like rock stars, where those who make really lousy decisions can be replaced through the cycle of elections, where our tax dollars are fairly appropriated, where the voting booth still gives the average person a chance to determine the temperature of the leadership it elects. I'm not saying the system isn't hugely broken, but I am saying that I do support a system of government. I just think it needs to be fixed, shored up, it needs to be purified. But the idea of anarchy as a suitable replacement, in my own mind, I can't reconcile that. But I'll let the comment section kind of duke it out. You guys knock yourselves out. You can talk about the role of government, the size of government, the merit of government or lack of, have a field day. I'm going to move on. Area code 289. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. It's Stacy.
Stacy, what's going on with you?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm well. I'm well. Getting set for the holidays. What's on your mind today?
I was thinking, I'm an atheist, you know that. But sometimes I think an awful lot of really cool shit happens to me. So what do you think about the old saying, everything happens for a reason?
I just posted, was it 2 weeks ago, a blog article. I don't have time to go scroll and find it now, but it was a counter to the notion that everything happens for a reason, which is obviously designed as a comfort mechanism when something happens in someone's life. You know, some serendipitous meeting between people or a tragedy occurs and they're trying to find the silver lining around the black cloud. They'll say everything happens for a reason. I just think it's understandable if you look at it in kind of a cursory way, but it's also in many ways just inexcusably insensitive to look at someone who's gone through something and say, oh, you know, it all happens for a reason. No, I don't buy that at all.
Okay, but what about things that seem to happen consecutively and they're all really good things?
That's, like, I mean, I'm glad like, it happened. Do you see like agency snowball. Behind like, why the, they happened in sequence?
Okay, forget the silver lining thing.
No, like, hang on.
The whole...
Let me make sure I understand you, Stacy. Are you asking me if I see a series of positive things happen all in sequence? Do I see an agency behind those or some sort of a reason that those things happened in a cluster?
Yeah, like, I don't know, magnetic pull of the earth or something, but it's just awfully coincidental. Sometimes when you think about how things happen, whether they're bad or good, forget the silver lining thing or that, you know, somebody's in control of it or anything. But I do find it awfully coincidental sometimes that amazing things can happen. And a lot of it has to do with your own drive, I believe, and your own desire to do good things in your life. But I don't know, it just sometimes seems awfully coincidental.
I think they call them coincidences for a reason. As we pattern seekers look around at the world, all around us, and we see things happening, we are going to see clusters of certain types of events, certain patterns will emerge. And when I was a believer, it was easy for me to then take the next step and say, well, man, this is, wow, there's something else out there. You know, and I know you're not going there, but you're saying, wow, isn't it uncanny how these things may happen? And it sure seems like something else is going on, something we may not even be aware of. I'm curious about it. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, exactly. Because I just look at my life. Well, I'm kind of reflecting a little bit because I hit the big 4-0 today.
Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I look at all the things that have happened and I think about where I was in my youth, where I was in my 30s and where I am now. And all the things that have happened just seem to lead me to where I am now. And there's a lot of really fabulous stuff happening to me right now. And, you know, I think, you know, the word destiny, right? I think we control our own destiny. And if we have a drive, if we're a very driven person, make things happen for ourselves. But there's so many coincidental things that just landed me where I am right now.
Well, I'm all about creating your own. I'm not sure I like the word destiny, meaning the destiny is a destination that is already preset and your life is spinning toward this outcome. I don't buy that. We were destined to meet each other. I don't buy that. I think it was a fortuitous meeting. You did meet each other. You walked in this door. You made this phone call. You made this decision. You accepted this job. You left this job. You did something and something amazing happened, but I don't think this was a foregone conclusion. I don't think you're living out an already established manifest destiny. I think our lives are products of our choices and circumstances, where we are, what we do, why we do it, what we do next, what happens around us when we do that next. I mean, all of these things are coming into play, and I think we can guide, at least to a degree, our future. You know, I'm glad wonderful things are happening in your life, though. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome. If getting, you know, if 35 to 40 or if 40 moving forward is as good as 35 to 40 has been so far, I can't wait.
Well, good for you. And I hope the birthday is great. I hope you save me some cake. You are having cake today, right?
Oh, possibly.
That's a no. You guys don't even have a party or anything planned? That's just sad.
Yeah. I had an epic weekend, actually.
You're front-loaded. Yeah. You front-loaded the birthday with a pre-party, a pre-celebration. Well, good for you. Good for you. Stacey, I appreciate you so much. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the call, and you have a happy birthday, okay?
Thanks, Seth.
Take care.
Bye.
That's been a totally unprepped, unplanned broadcast, and I hope it's been enjoyable to listen to. It's, it's always a little scary for a host who likes to I like to prepare my stuff. I like to come in here and have a guideline and outline some notes, and I have all these things in place. But there is something kind of fun about just going to the switchboard and seeing what happens next. So thanks for listening to the broadcast. I'll see you back here on the 1st of December. As we get into the war on Christmas, that's going to be an interesting broadcast. And until then, I hope the holidays are wonderful for you and yours. Take care of yourself. I'll see you next time on the Thinking Atheist radio broadcast.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.